Hello, everyone. Welcome to another podcast. This time, I'm very excited to welcome someone whom I know for a long time and someone who's interested in architecture education have been with me in my studio programs, either in the second or in the design thesis architecture studio program. And along with the topic that we propose, architects or artists, I would like to welcome Amna A. Emir. Hello, Amna.
Hi, thank you, Dr. Naziati. Thanks very much.
Okay, Amna, I'm going to just call you Amna. You can call me Doctor. Okay. That's weird.
I'll call you Naziati. Yeah.
Thank you, Amna. So, Amna, you know, this to start off this podcast interview, we come a long way. So you've been helping out with the architecture design studios, and I've had many architects who came by who are from the Architecture Association School from London. And my good friends are as well, who were graduates from that, you know, and who did not graduate from that. I noticed that some people struggled in the Architecture Association, but that's not the point here. But I'd like you to start, and maybe you could introduce yourself, and maybe you could also start off the session with thinking whether the education that you received or you went through in the AA or elsewhere, help to think about this topic. Why do you want to do this topic today on architects or artists? Go on.
Thanks, Nazi. Well, first and foremost, I've got to also give credit to my alumni. Prior to AA, I was educated at UTM, and there was a very good 2.5 formative years, so I must give credit to that. It was a totally different educational system, but it shaped how I then began to understand the processes while at the AA. Now, I wasn't good and bad. I had to restart my education at the AA right from scratch, so I did the whole 5 years, took a couple of years out in between. But it gave me the ability to observe what AA was, how one benefits from this institution called the AA. And so that was my educational years. I believe the whole process experience that AA really truly shaped me and the ability to question whatever I do, that's important, and that's still something I observe now. You've been to the AA, and you know what it was like. It was, it was really overwhelming. But what was intriguing is it was a diverse community of people, and not necessarily architects. You know, in my last year, I was taught by Jeff Kipnis, who is an art. Who's a critic, he's a writer, not even an architect. And there you had a community of people ranging from artists, performers, writers, scientists, technologists, I mustn't forget that, botanists, zoologists, and so on. And so AA became the convergence of a laboratory of thought with, abundance of ideas. And The ability to then benefit from the AA is, if one just observes the various differences, you then begin to see a pattern that is continuous, and you make it your own school of thought. And that to me would be the successful outcome of having been to the AA. And that's it, really. It's just a collective laboratory of thought. So that's the AA. Since then, I've had about 28 years of practice, 30 years of experience in the industry, but the my company, New Formation Architects, which I formed with a couple of other partners. We are now in our 28th year. We've observed all kind of challenges, you know, and the current economic challenge is nothing new. But so what keeps me going? You had a very interesting topic. Artists is architects. Is that what you stated?
Architects are artists.
Because oh, wow.
Architects. Yeah, it's based on my earlier podcast with the same topic, which I just had a one-person dialogue on it, looking into like one of the things that was interesting is that in 1959, a prominent architect in India addressing the Indian Institute of Architect at that time in 1959, yeah? And the debate, or there was a discussion about when you say that architecture is both science and art. So he insisted that architects are artists with scientific background, not the other way around, which is architects are scientists with artistic background. So that made me also think about other things that I've read recently, and then I did that podcast. So And it's great that now that topic had a lot of downloads from the podcast. So the statistics. So I thought that could be an interesting topic that we could have start a series. And I'm starting it with you, Amna, this series. So in that sense, I mean, when you mentioned about UTM and in all. Because I have two minds with this. In the first year in UTM, we did a lot of design. Two artists were our lecturers. Now the students have two artists, which are the lecturers after when we started. One was a graphic artist, one was a fine arts mm-hmm. artist that were in the first year. Yeah. And they had the bread and butter curriculum, and I think the late Abdulrazza Abdulrahman created the curriculum where they did carpets, Persian carpets, or you know what, all sorts of carpets and room with a view. And although they were architectural programs, there was strong on artistic sections or something like that. Perhaps you could comment about the importance of starting where we are, that we are actually artists more than scientists.
You're so right, Nazi. In fact, I was so fortunate. I had Razak Jack, as we called him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he very much is our Sufi master, if you wish, you know. You know, the ability to question not just tangible forms, you know, but whatever one creates. But from the day to day of architectural education, yes, you know, we went through graphic studies, drawings, creative objects, and so on, and that was so useful. But it was very interesting. It was during an era where we were inclined to look at whatever underlying messages we were imparting with whatever we were doing. So I brought that with me to the AA. At the AA, it was very structured. Literally, you had it. It was, you know, very, very many school of thoughts, and you were presented with that, with those options, and trick, if you wish, to graduating from the AA. Is to be able to have a continuity of school of thoughts, and this is where the ability to think rather helped me, and I think that's the artistry in the field of architecture. The scientific aspect, as Pandika mentioned, that to me is a prerequisite. There's no hierarchy in how one starts. I remember many years ago, I was asked at a talk if I advocated the idea of form follows function. You know this. It's a very well-renowned metaphor and such. And I answered, not form follows function, but form follows form. And my God, the backlash that I received.
Wow.
But actually, what I meant to say is function is a prerequisite to any design, but we forget that form isn't just tangible forms. And today, it's even more appropriate. And by forms, I meant you've got forms of social, cultural, political, economic, and environmental order, which are the pillars of sustainability. And they all ask for equal attention from us as shapers of society, community, and the built environment. So that's what I meant by form follows form. If I may, yeah, go ahead.
No. Yeah, I think you were about to finish something.
Well, yeah, that brings me to the quote that you asked if I could, share at the AA as well. I remember our very first lesson when I was in a unit by Jeff Kipnis. He showed us a couple of artworks by Jasper Johns. I had no inclination, no idea who Jasper was. I mean, he was a great artist in the 1950s. I remember I was shown a painting that was, you know, to me was like a sack of potatoes. You had these various potato shaped forms, and that was all it was. But then I realized upon reflection that what Johns did in that particular painting, I forget the title, but there are so many other works, was to show that in what seemed to be homogenous, there was heterogeneity. There was a sense of the independent individual in the collective whole. And that form very much, it started to shape the direction that I would then continuously pursue in the art of architecture, if you wish. So there is a quote that I really like by him, which if you allow me to just read this out, yeah, it says, "Make something a kind of object which, as it changes or falls apart, dies as it were, or increase in its parts, grow as it were, offers no clue to what state of form or nature was at any previous time. Physical and metaphysical obstinacy. Could this be a useful object?" He questions. That was his quote in a sketch of some kind. I love this quote because what John does is he makes reference to an inferred past, and he then invites everyone to ignore it. To ignore the origin, both physical and metaphysical. Now, is that responsible, he seems to ask? I then ask myself, can you create something devoid of meaning? Now, is that even possible? What do we leave the beneficiaries of our design, both artists and architect? And this is where architects have to be artists. Because while the artist is driven and is consistently aware of the message he's imparting, architects have completely forgotten their obligation. So that to me is in essence how we come close to the artist in us. Our built forms tend to leave a legacy the conceit in us thinks that, you know, whatever we do, it's meant to last forever. And that's what I like about questioning the origin of objects and things. You know, we've got to acknowledge the nature of impermanence of phenomena. And this is where, intentionally or not, we shape the experience of things, of objects, with ideas which constantly change, which isn't even our own. we connect these experiences through perceptions form, and then we make up our own view of reality. And therefore, we should be accountable for whatever messages we relay in creating our built form, whether it's tangible or none. And that's the point of Jasper's quotes. And all his objects of art. There's one very interesting piece that he did in 1955. It's called The White Flag. Do Google it. And what he does is he appropriates the U.S. flag, drained it of its iconic subject, of its characteristic red, white, and blue, and the resulting effect is a ghostly white image. Now, that exactly is...
Wow.
Yeah, he strips bare any preconceived notion, and that's what I meant, you know. What do we do as architects? We stay guided with our own school of thought. We've got to be aware of whatever effects, intentional and unintentional. That's the artistry in us. So yeah, that's my inspiration from Jasper's. Look at the 1955.
I like to this make me think a lot in terms of wanting to try out, to test out something with you here regarding architect. Lost this role that artists has in conveying meanings, right?
Yeah.
You know, they just do forms and quite meaningless sometimes, right? So the meaning was given, perhaps the meaning is given by people, because in semiotics, isn't it, in the study of architecture theory, in actually the people define like Dataran Merdeka, what it is symbolizing, or the parliament building. I mean, we're looking at Johns took the American flag, which is something that is an institution, right? The flag itself. Flag, yeah. You can talk about the flag. But I like to talk about non-architects' buildings, like the Malay traditional house and the Chinese shop houses. There is no architect's name to that, but they built those things as vessels. When we talk about phenomenology, you touch about a lot of things. I don't know whether you could pick up something here that you could explore further as an architect, because back to the topic, architects are artists. Now we talk about these patterns since a long time. I mean, the Chinese shop houses came from South China, and the British says, okay, you can have this certain amount of land, and then the form is taken, is being done, parapet wall, and then long sort of building form, you know, the frontage, the street, the 5 foot way is like a prerequisite, right? Those are, you said, prerequisite, the functions.
Yes.
And then suddenly this form is taken shape, and much of it's interior with the Chinese shop houses, it's just a facade. Okay, this is, they have a lot of styles, right? You have with a classical style or more of an added mixture of eclectic styles and styles, right? So they're the forms. So you have lots of this all over in Malaysia's town. Also the Malay traditional houses. You have the different styles in Perak as opposed to Kelantan or Terengganu, but all of them have tebalaya. All of them are well naturally ventilated. And then these things work, and these things are beautiful, yes. And these things exist from time, and people fight for them. The conservationists want to go and take them from their, you know, they don't want them to report or destroy it in one corner. So they took them and dismantled them and put them elsewhere to care for them, because this artifacts are so important. So this, the phenomenology aspect was at that time, it was important where it is cited, you know, in a certain kampo or whatever. But now it's like admired. It has to be, you know, Kampung Baru, they're going to retain seven buildings, seven traditional houses. So why retain them at all, you know? I mean, I understand why, because they are architect, as an educationist, you know, young people have to actually know what is passive energy design. So these people are not architects. It's, you know, we even question who are architects, actually. Questioning that. Who are these architects? Maybe you can, you know, I want to see what you feel about this.
Oh, goodness, you've thrown me.
Goodness.
Goodness. But you know how some cities try to replicate? You just can't replicate a thought, something that's authentic. You know, I'm just reminded. So I'm avoiding answering your question for a while. A slight diversion while the mind thinks and how to position itself. But there is a very recent work by Jean Nouvel.
Jean Nouvel.
Yes, Jean Nouvel. You can Google it.
I know Jean Nouvel.
Yes, it's a tower somewhere, and it's got three typologies overlaid on top of each other into a tower. And I think he calls it No Tower or something.
Uh-huh.
I just was so amazed. When I say amazed, I must say a bit slightly horrified that in the, you know, here we are trying to emulate that authenticity which we saw in, you know, the Chinese typology, in the kampongs, you know. And the challenge occurs when we go vertical. You notice how do you create the kampong in the verticality?
Kampominium. I remember Jimmy Kim wanted to do kampominium.
Yeah. And what John had, please do look at, Jean Nouvel had, was a stack of stuff, I would call it. Hardly the solution I would imagine to be. And I really hope architects don't move in that direction. I love lots of Nouvel's work, but this is the problem when one is merely obsessed with tangible forms. Then one tends to just look at envelopes or collages of stuff. And again, going back to John's and lots of works, there are contemporaries which I like. I must name a couple of contemporary artists which I'm just so amazed. Lindsay Harold Wong, do look her up. She's based in Penang. I believe she's from New York and she's made Malaysia her home. I love Drew Harris, the Canadian artist, but it's against the idea of collage, you know, not just a juxtaposition of objects that are disparate. I sent you an image.
I'm looking at John Nouvel's tower.
Yes.
When it comes to skyscrapers or high-rise building, I never designed any of that. So I don't know what are the challenges, but through my students' work, you have a lot of, because one thing it is going to be very, it's something you're going to see from far. It's something that's almost sculptural. And we know about Ram Koolhaas and CCTV in China and all these other towers. Mm-hmm. And this is the struggle, isn't it? When architects try to put meaning into that those sculptures in the sky, you know, when it's a low-rise, nondescript building or even a house, you can interpret it however you want to interpret it. Maybe you can concentrate on the volume or the inside out. But when you deal with a high-rise building, is outside in, and you have to, the appreciation is always from afar, and it's not, it's between a heart, it's a, between the devil and the deep blue sea, when I feel that the architect has to deal with. So yeah. What are the better towers? Can you juxtapose with just purely functional towers, or what are the better towers to you?
I think you can't, there's never a similarity between contrasting typologies. So, you know what I mean? The answer is not trying to emulate the horizontal and just stacking programs vertically and then declare it as no tower or the horizontal tower. It doesn't work that way. Mm. So perhaps it's the idea of intimate spaces that you get, you know, in the kampung environment, in the the courtyard of the Chinese shophouse typology. It's the idea of skill, and it's the whole experience.
Can we go there a bit? You know, when you said the word intimate space that it, just now. Okay, when we look into a piece of art, a work of art, right? I go to the art gallery, and then there is this texture. There is this. At first, I don't want to read the title, and then I try to figure out the title. And when I read the title, yeah, I actually understood what the artist is trying to say. You know, that's what the game I play when I go to this place. Yeah. A bit like going to your AA show, design show. But anyway, the intimacy is in between the perceiver and what the meaning the artist was trying to convey. And when you talk about the kampung house and Chinese shop houses, typologies, it's the revealing of information. Then when you talk about intimacy, the story that it tells, the slow revealing, you know, peeling off the layers of information. So in a Malay house, maybe a bit of this artifacts or, you know, the way people live, the way people work, you know, which reveals itself in the artifacts they have in these shop houses and Malay houses. Sometimes they're old artifacts, what do you call it, lesung batu, or things to do with cooking, you know, all these things. And the space and the function of it reflects, because that was the intention of the designer. The intention of, this works elsewhere, this pattern works elsewhere, and I'm just going to replicate it, and just going to embellish it. I'm going to put a screen here. Maybe I'll put more kerawang or screen with the floral motifs that is akin reflect in this area, not in Kelantan, but in Malacca, will have a different sense. We'll put a bit of a steps, which is in stone rather than in timber. You know, because of the material that you can find there, and the craftsman also. So they're revealing their knowledge. You know, it's like when you see something like Jean Nouvel's No Tower, it seems ham-fisted, isn't it? Dark, dark, dark. And it seems contrived, isn't it? I mean, okay, I'm an educator. I can go and criticize more than you.
You're allowed to, not me.
But I appreciate what you're saying about Jasper Johns and the things that we can investigate ourselves. How artists convey meanings for architects, to actually find the artistic part of them, that artist in them, to actually you know, be more intimate with their work.
I believe architects, you know, our objects of art shouldn't be accidental. Because like it or not, views are formed. So we've got to just be accountable to what it is that we're relaying, what impact it has to, you know, the communities at large. We're trained to make our buildings function. We're trained to make it work. So that's already a prerequisite. But the subtle nuances, you know, it's we're losing it. I think I blame, although the modern movement is very much what I was inspired, but somewhere when there was a movement towards, you know, stripping ornamentation and so on, Then we began to lose the sense of materiality. I mean, you know, the brutalist works. We've had this conversation before, Nazi, on another chat platform. I mean, it's the nature of production then that made it so brutal. Apart from the fact that they were mainly institutional civic buildings and so on. But take that today. And when you have the ability to recreate plasticism using different forms of materiality and all that, then one has the ability to do away with all these large monstrosities that people were against, you know, against that homogeneous nature the restrictions of constructability then to what we have now. So, you know, use the era that we have now to start looking at what meaning we are imparting with whatever we're doing. That's what I'm saying, really.
Yeah, I think towards the end of our session here, I'd like you to give some advice on when we look at what we discuss here is about in a bigger picture is the practice and theory of architecture. Mm-hmm. And we are teaching students of architecture in the second year now. And we learn from precedent studies in the semester one. And it is somehow I felt that in the first year, the students, they start with form too much for form's sake, you know, and lack of being in touch with reading. I mean, they hate reading, right? Students of architecture, they don't like reading. So we force them to have theory. And what you said about modern movement and how there was a postmodern movement after that, and Jeff Kipnis as well was into that postmodernism. I mean, he was critical as well about many things. Can you give some ideas and thoughts on how students of architecture should be thought regarding this, so that what are the things that we do right and what we do not do right in our architecture studios that you could this will really help with our conversation on architecture education. But I know that it's about architects and artists, but this goes back to, should the student of architecture because they like modern architecture, they like the minimalism. So I was thinking about minimalism. If I had this, my house to be minimalist, I cannot grab anything because I'm disabled and I cannot steady myself. There's a bit of there's a bit of ledge or a bit of design that I can grab. if it's minimalist, I can't really, it's not functional at all. Okay, go on. What are the takeaways that we could have from this discussion?
Takeaways, my goodness. I mean, okay, based from our interaction and working with you with your various studios, right? From right up to TC's years, I think it's fundamental. We really have to observe our founding fathers, from the modern era to current, and see what's appropriate to our context. And when I say context, it isn't just landscape and the physical realm, but really what's appropriate, exactly as you said, less is more, minimalist and so on, but is it appropriate to the end user, the beneficiary of the product that you're designing? I would urge all the students to abandon the computer and just start working with your hands. Goodness, there'll be ample time.
You need to urge the lecturers who impose on them.
Yes, the lecturers are doing that first. I mean, we've gone too far ahead of our time. That's a problem. And it's just so easy to create now with digital technology that we forget the essence. And that's where we lose all this intimacy of whatever that we're designing. That's where there's no sense of there's no sense. What happens is you when you generate at such a fast pace, architectural gymnastics, if you wish, with the advent of all kind of sophisticated computer technology and so on, then you get this, you get what I call a collage, architectural collage that is so homogenous, even though they're so complex. And that's where it has lost its sense of meaning. And if you look at, unfortunately, if you look at a lot of institutions now and the products that the universities come out with, they're so similar.
It's what do you call it? It's banal. It's banality.
Homogeneous. Banal. Banal's good. Banal is good. You know, you don't want.
Okay, I got the wrong definition. Homogeneity is not good. Although it looks complex, you know, people say, oh, complex, difficult, but actually it's very homogeneous in terms of the loss in the sense of meaning.
And that's where, go ahead.
No, that's just a reminder that we're almost time's up. So, but I'd like you to say a few minutes about this topic of architects or artists, and we touched on a few things quickly, like an artist with the brush strokes, many brush strokes, ... whatever strokes today. And but what is it that is most important for you to leave us that you feel?
I feel that we've got to be aware, whether we like it or not, the outcome of what we produce forms a perception. So let's be accountable to that perception in whatever meaning we create, intentionally or unintentionally.
Let's be responsible, accountable, you mean, as well.
Yeah.
Because we are responsible scientists, but we're artists.
Yeah. We're good scientists.
It's so much advanced in technology, ahead of ourselves, but we forgot the fundamentals.
Yeah.
Okay. On that note. It's a brief interlude. You are always welcome to come again to discuss on another topic, Amna. Thank you so much for sharing with us all your knowledge.
I thoroughly enjoyed this. Wonderful. I'll now go look up all the various precedents I mentioned.
I'm looking up to all the various things. Amna, thank you so much.
Okay, then take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.